Today's guest is Sheila Wysocki. She is a mother of two and an accomplished private detective. After solving her former roommate's murder, a case that had gone cold for more than 25 years, Sheila devoted herself to detective work completely, founding the nonprofit Without Warning, Fight Back. She uses this as an outlet for advocating for victims of crime. She's a licensed professional investigator who will get to the truth no matter how long it takes. Her podcast, Without Warning, should be next on your list. I'm hooked, and I do this stuff for a living. She is widely known for what she does, having appeared on Anderson Cooper, Dateline, Katie Couric, Biography, ABC's 2020, Crime Watch Daily, Criminal, and other numerous podcasts. My Favorite Detective Stories podcast features past or present detectives and investigative journalists. As a working investigator of over 42 years, I hope to inform, inspire, and entertain you with great stories. We want to learn from our guests how they got started in the field and why they decided to become investigators in the first place. Listen as they tell us about the early years and who were their mentors and why those mentors had such a huge impact on their careers. We'll explore what makes for a good investigator and what makes for good investigation. But most importantly, after you get to know our guests, we will ask them for their favorite detective story, or maybe two. Stay tuned. The interview is about to begin. Hi, Sheila. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, John, for having me.
Well, and how are things in Tennessee today?
They're beautiful. Great day. Sunshine. It's a good day around here.
That's nice to hear. We're a little cloudy here in Connecticut, a little bit of heat and humidity to go with it, but we're promised to have a nice weekend. How about you?
I am traveling, so I will have a beautiful weekend at the beach.
Oh, how nice. So my listeners already have your bio, and they already know a lot about you from both the previous podcast and now this one. So But before we get into the standardized questions, I just wanted to commend you. We're both podcasters, which is kind of neat. You have a wonderful podcast called Without Warning. And I'm a fan. I mean, I got hooked. I mean, I got to tell you that. It's really well done. It's a great story. But as importantly, you're a great storyteller.
Thank you. And that coming from another, I'm not a podcaster because I don't know what I'm doing. You obviously do. So coming from you, that means a lot.
No, but telling stories, you know how to frame it. You know how to put it together. You know how to build the suspense. And the other thing, too, is I said this to you before when we were setting things up, that your production on this is immaculate. It really shows through. I have to tell you that. Now, and to that end, I mean, this is just a conversation between two of us. You're bringing in audio tape. You're bringing in recordings from other sources that have been probably taped over a couple different times. And by the time you get your hands on it, so your people that are teasing out the words and being able to make it cogent so everybody can hear it is really a lot of work. And I think that they should be also given a lot of kudos for that as well.
Oh, so. I am a huge fan, not knowing the production side of it. I couldn't have done it without Resonate Recordings, is the group that I use out of Kentucky. And those guys have bent over backwards and were doing the production the day before. I don't get it in weeks before. I'm getting it in at day of, on some cases, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and they get it out by 5.
Oh, you're mean.
Not on purpose. It's because tips are coming in. And so I followed the tips, and then we have to change everything because I'm not going to put out old information.
No, I guess you're right. And we're going to talk a little bit more about Without Warning later. But one last thing I want to say is that you've added a Patreon subscription channel, which I think was very smart. And you're giving your listeners additional content by allowing them access to some of the written materials, police reports and diagrams and that type of thing. Am I right?
Correct. Any behind the scenes of a true investigation, we're making it public.
So not only are you allowing your listeners to be listeners to the story, but to be participants in it as well, and maybe crowdsourcing this a little bit.
I am a huge crowdsourcer. So there are people that are sitting at their table with their kids that are smarter than I am, and they can pick up something I haven't. And so they'll email me. I mean, I love the emails. I love the interaction on Facebook to look at different things. So I'm a huge fan.
Well, so to that end, I just wanted to commend you as well. I think that was smart, and I think it's going to add value to your listenership. And I wish you nothing but the best with this. And we'll talk about it again a little bit later on. But I'm almost wanting to describe you as the reluctant PI. I had a friend a few episodes back, Dave Watts, who was the accidental PI. But I think you came into this somewhat reluctantly. And if you want to start telling me that story, and we'll just take it from there.
So I came into the business, so to speak, as a mom and wanting to solve a case of my roommate, my college roommate's murder, and not knowing what to do. I was lucky enough to have people in my life that told me I could become a PI and kind of walked me through the process. And through that, the man that murdered my roommate is now in death row.
Okay. And it seems like part of that process, and I won't take away from that story if that's one of the stories you're planning to tell me later on, but that you were, I think your middle initial was P for persistent.
P is in pain in the ass.
Okay. Yeah, I can ride that too, you know. All right. But it was through your work that you were able to do that. And you know, it's interesting because the jurisdiction for this terrible, terrible crime and finally its resolution was in Dallas. And I'm not sure what the county name is in Dallas. I apologize. I'm sure you know it. But they in fact, created what's considered to be a conviction integrity unit at some point in the last couple of years to look over some of their convictions that they hadn't done so well, and that there was possibility of people being innocent people being convicted of crimes. But here you had such a stonewalling from the police department for how many years?
Oh gosh, for forever. It took us 25 years to get to the court process. So it was 20 years when I initially contacted them, and then another 5 years after that.
Unbelievable. So that's what launched your career. So let's just talk a little bit about your being a private investigator, the type of work that you do. And I'm all ears.
So of course, initially learning the process, I did what I call the bread and butter of the business, the cheating spouse, the boyfriend. They're not sure if he's cheating or, you know, their surveillance, those kind of things. So I learned the process of being a private investigator. And I lived in a community that had gated, guarded men that sponsored me. So I was able to work with those guys and learn what happens in an investigation. So I did the process of the cheating spouse, the internet bullying, the moms having trouble on the internet with copyright. We had a case where a boyfriend, and I always thought this was fascinating because my children were young at that time, that someone would take a picture in a locker room of a girl, you know, getting dressed or whatever, and pass it on to her boyfriend. And that picture, that naked picture, ends up on the internet. What the kids didn't realize is that ends up, there's a process, and that's a problem that is now child pornography. So right. I learned a lot about laws like that, things I never even thought of, you know, growing up. So I love the business because every day something new happens. And then from there, after my roommate's murder was convicted, I started getting emails from families. And that's when I went solely into the business of only working for victims' families.
Okay. So you went from a generalist in your geographic area to a specialist now, more of a national reach, but specializing in, what would you describe them as, the general cases, type of cases?
It's cold cases for victims' families. So anybody who has a mystery or they're not sure if their family member died the way the police said they died, or if they're not getting the police to pay attention to their case, then I get contacted.
Okay. I had been mistaken. I thought that you'd also done Mysterious Disappearance too as well.
I did that for a while, but I consider that the learning process. I did Missing People, Missing Persons, but I really now only focus on victims' families.
Okay.
Now I will say this. I take cases. So I have three attorneys that if they call me, I will do whatever, if it's a counterfeit case or, an injury case, I'll work with them, but I generally don't take those from the public.
Okay. Now, to that point of, so you still have, your favorite clients, I mean, for lack of a better word, right? They're hard to let go of. I've had them for 20 some years as well. And when they call you, you say, okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. When did you start going almost exclusively in this specialized niche?
2013 is when it was final, where that was all I was going to do.
Okay. Now it found you.
Right. So these families, it's okay. So it's amazing to me still to this day that I get notebooks that are 4 inches, 5 inches thick sent to me unsolicited. I don't put out anywhere that I'm doing this, and they have their entire case in there. Or I get emails with all the documents from a case, and these families are so desperate to have someone hear them. And I turn cases down all day long because there's just one of me. And so I have to be very, very selective on the cases, but there are so many out there. So if there's a private investigator out there trying to decide what area they want to go into, this is the area to go into.
Okay. So you had a personal interest in your roommate's death. Murder. And you wanted to move the obstinate police department from having the file sit on a desk and collect dust to where they did something with the case. And that something being DNA, which was becoming more and more obvious that was what they needed to do in this case. But then aside from that, you have to tell me a little bit about how you had to start learning about murder and about murder cases and about police reports and about interviewing people. And so I'd like you to kind of start to walk me through that education process.
So the best part about how I got into it is I surrounded myself with very smart people. And that's to this day, I still do that. And I learned from a Los Angeles homicide detective, worked with him for a while, a Detroit detective. So I surrounded myself with people that had already done it, from 600 murders that they solved to, everybody had their number. I don't have a number, and I'm not going to be that number person, but each one of them taught me something different. So through the Detroit guy, he has still to this day, he's now a professor at a college. He taught me probably the most. He taught me about the interviews, the techniques, what to look for, what a guilty person does, what an innocent person does, the words. And then I went to as many classes. I probably have more classes than any PI put all of you guys put together, because okay. I felt like that's the way to learn. So I go to every conference that I can go to, not as much now because I'm so busy, but I go to conferences. Brandon Perrin's doing a conference on interview techniques. Well, of course I'm going to take that. He is a fantastic teacher. You've got Cynthia, you've had Cynthia on your show. She does a great job in the internet. Anything that anybody does, I will take a class on. And then on top of that, I have a group of people that I'll bring my cases to and say, what do you think? So I have a very tight-knit group of investigators, and we'll go over my cases.
Nice. So I wanted to ask you, you've mentioned one of your mentors being from Detroit, and if you want to give him a shout out, it's okay.
Oh, Paul Fantuzzi. He's a professor now. He teaches it.
Okay. And where is he a professor at, may I ask?
Middle Tennessee State University.
Oh, down here. Yeah. Down there.
Yeah.
Down there. Right. Down here is Connecticut. Down there is middle of Tennessee.
Yeah, I call him the Popo. He still has that attitude, you know, of a cop.
Well, that's fine. And I'm sure that he keeps those students in line in class.
He's a fantastic teacher. They're so lucky to have him.
But what I'm also hearing is that not only did you have a chance to have a mentor at a time when you were literally an empty vessel.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? And you had no bad habits. And
I still eat the donuts, gonna say.
All right. Well, I meant investigative.
Okay.
Traditionally, I can understand that. The double chocolate with sprinkles calls to me too once in a while, Sheila. But back to, you didn't have any bad investigative habits to unlearn, and you weren't a burned out cop, for lack of a better word. I don't want to say that, but you know, there's a lot of burnouts, and there's a lot of people that they get into the private investigative business and they think that it'll be easy and it'll be, you know, a walk in the park. And quite frankly, it's the opposite. There's a lot more expected of you. So anyway, but that's my little soapbox. But to your point, you came in fresh and you came in with a desire to learn. And you surrounded yourself with good mentors. Anybody else that you'd like to give a shout to?
Mike Kenny. He was, and I say my boss, but I kind of laugh over that. He is still one of my best friends. Well, he is my best friend in this business. So anytime I have a case today, he's one of the first calls I make to sit down and go through it. So he does a lot of stalking cases and celebrity things. He does the real, I call it the high-end foo-foo stuff, but he's excellent. I mean, I was in LA with him when he was doing a stalking case that nobody else could get done. And he is so persistent and he does it.
Okay. So I'm hearing that this is a good trait, you know, like you, persistent, but these are things that you latch onto. And I think that's part of what you have to do with the work that you do, be persistent and not give up. And there's more than one way to approach a situation.
Right.
So
my cases I take for the long haul. My cases are years. They're not a 6-month missing person case. They're not, they're years. I mean, I've been with some families for, now we're going into 3 years. We're about to go to court.
Okay. And then to that end, how many of those cases get the opportunity for a little bit of this crowdsourcing that we talked about?
Yes. So I now insist on two things, that I will only take cases that families will go public and that they will let me share the information with the public to come back in, whether it's a seminar with CrimeCon or it's what we're doing with Patreon or the podcast, because I know in this case that I'm doing, the Lauren Agee case, I'm getting tips. I'm following up on tips. So why would I limit myself when somebody feels now comfortable to pick up the phone and say, hey, I know something?
Yeah, no, you're right. And you mentioned CrimeCon. Can you mention that again just briefly?
Yes.
So that, you know, people that are listening will know what that means.
So CrimeCon is a seminar conference for people that are really big into the true crime world. And it's the public conference. So people like Dateline, Josh Mankiewicz I just adore Josh. He was the one who got me in touch with CrimeCon. He's with Dateline. He goes there and meets the public, the people that are fans. And then they've got Beth Karras, who is a talking head, true crime person. And then you have people like, Dr. Laura Petler, who does, crime investigation also, who does seminars. And so I did a seminar with probably some of the people that'll be listening to your podcast. There was a group of 15 investigators that flew from all over the country. Some of them stayed at my house, and we all did CrimeCon, and we took a true crime case and we presented it. And it was supposed to be 200 people. It ended up being 400 people, but we broke them up in groups and they went through the crime scene and they had all the information. And the information I got back from those participants was outstanding. We're using some of them in court.
And these are real honest to God cases. These aren't mock cases.
Absolutely. They're real. They're my cases.
Wow. So you get a fresh set, not a fresh set of mind. You get not only a fresh set of eyes, but you get multiple fresh set of eyes working together.
Yes. And they're incredible. Yeah. And I'll give you an example. I don't know if you know Brandy Lord. So Brandy Lord is one of the private investigators that came down to head a group. And so she does a different kind of investigation than I do. So people were able to work with her and go through the way she does investigations versus the way I do it. And her group was a separate group that was taken through the crime scene. And in comparison, of course, Mike Kenney was there and he did his group. So we were able to bring in different set of eyes and also different perspectives of how people do investigations, all to get the same, you know, result, basically.
Yeah. And to me, it goes against stereotype, you know, the solo primary detective on a case. It goes against stereotype in a police department where maybe a primary has a case and maybe has a partner. But other than that, maybe a police officer might add some information and I learned something on the street, or hey, somebody else saw something else. But generally, it's very much a silo within most of the investigative entities that, you know, we're aware of, whether it be local policing or municipal or state policing or even federal. And here is something totally foreign to that, and probably a lot more effective in that it's solving a problem, you know?
And let me say, the participants are amazing. I had everything from nurses to doctors to, people that taught criminal justice in colleges. So these people were so smart. I had a hard time keeping up with them. I'll tell you that.
Well, understand that you are only as smart as your five best friends. So you've just elevated your, you know, IQ level up a bunch by getting these people involved. Now, I say that jokingly, but I'm not. I mean, and it's also swallowing your own ego, which a lot of investigators have a hard time doing. Amen. Not you or me. But,
listen, the way I look at it, I want to be the dumbest person in the room. I want to learn from everybody around me. Always want to be that person.
And I understand that. That won't be our pull quote, by the way, for this for this podcast. I want to be the dumbest person in the room. Nope, we won't do that.
It's okay.
But to your point, so many investigators have tunnel vision on the case and they don't allow in other ideas. And here's a complete 180 degree different way of looking at it. You're crowdsourcing it. You're group, you know, thinking it out. And you're getting people with varied backgrounds that are not dyed in the wool, you know, law enforcement. They're not carrying the blue, the gold shield. They're not wearing blue. And here they are bringing their own life experiences to a situation. And I'm sure you've probably said more than once when you looked at these situations, I've looked at this stuff 100 times and all of a sudden somebody else sees it with clear eyes and they see exactly what's going on and they make the forest from the trees.
Right.
I got that right?
Exactly. That is exactly. And why wouldn't we use that as a template for cases?
Okay. So you're a little bit of a trailblazer here starting from your own place of learning. You know, and that's a good way to explain it. You're not coming into it saying, I know everything and I'm going to apply this now to this business. It's no, I learned this because I had to, because I couldn't let my roommate's death go unanswered. And she had to be spoken for. And from doing that, you started down this path and you were doing it with no pretense, no idea of how it should be done.
Right. And that's the thing is, I don't have law enforcement background, and right, that could be a blessing or it could be a problem. But I know I have to scrap for every information I get. Mm-hmm. Everything, I have to work harder than anybody to get that information. So if I got it, it's solid.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that. Now, I'm looking at my watch and I'm seeing what time it is.
Okay.
And I know you have a hard deadline. Do we have time for your stories between now and then?
Yeah. So the case that I'm going to talk about, it, I have been publicly beaten up over, but I stood firm on what I thought happened. So I took the case, and it was because the family was obviously desperate. Their daughter was missing. And I stepped on a lot of toes while I was doing the case, learned many lessons. So these are the things that PIs should not do. You should never go on TV criticizing the state police, because they will show up at your house and intimidate you and search your house. So lesson number one, don't do that. Lesson number two is they have control of the media. So you going on TV criticizing them means they'll come back after you and criticize you more and call you a liar. Through all that process, we were able to, I had my team of people, we all stuck together, except for one. And we kind of weathered the storm through that case. And who we thought committed the crime and murdered the young lady was correct. I had worked with a television reporter who stuck with me through it, saying she's not wrong, who ended up getting fired for sticking with me.
Wow.
3 years later, the trial happens. I was right about who did it. The state police had to say they lied. The state police, of course, then the person resigned from his post. He did intimidate me. But through it all, I knew I just needed to be silent, because the truth would come out. And I was doing it for the right reasons. So if you Google my name, you will see that the state police said I was a liar. I didn't know what I was doing. And 3 years later, even though I was right, and the reporter that was fired is now at another station, had me come on and tell about the police threatening me, searching the house, taking things, and intimidating me. And nobody knows that part of the story. They only think I lied. So those are the little lessons as a PI, what not to do. Okay. But if you do it, you better be real sure you can weather that storm.
Any reluctance to mention either the victim's name or the person that was arrested and convicted?
The person that was arrested and convicted was Zach Adams. I'm not going to go down the road of the case. You can Google it, but I don't want to get
asking.
I have a lot of bad feelings about that case.
Okay. But anyway, was this early in your career?
No, you'd think I'd be smarter than that. I almost quit after that. I left Tennessee because I thought, oh my gosh, the state police can come and do what they did, and nobody seems to care that they have that power and no accountability. So I actually moved out of Tennessee for a while. And then I decided I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to go back. I miss my husband. And, I came back and started working with victims' families.
Okay. And can you tell me what they had wrong and what you had right?
What they had wrong is who they weren't. I don't know. They had so many things wrong. It's public record. I listened to what was going on. And so we made a list of who we believed took the young lady, and we were right. But nobody wanted to listen because they had their mindset on another person.
Did the people that you found out to be the true culprits, did they have any of that information in their hands, and they poo-pooed it or turned a blind eye to it?
They had all the information from us, and they had all the information. Yes, they had it. But you know, when you have your mindset that it's this person.
Mm-hmm. I understand. That's why I asked. So that's a great story, and I appreciate that. I thank you so much for it. Sheila, I need to ask you now a little bit more about how people can get in touch with you, and tell us a little bit more about the podcast. Okay.
Okay. So people can get in touch with me, Sheila at SheilaWysocki.com, or they can go to Patreon and join Patreon, which helps the podcast. And, I mean, basically email through my website, which is SheilaWysocki.com. I used to be able to say that I respond to everybody that within a timely manner that reaches out to me. But I said that on TV once, and 1,000 emails later, I learned not to ever say that again. So I try. And there's only one of me. So, and then the podcast is, the first time I've ever tried it, and it was a test, and it has turned out to be a fantastic way to get the information out without someone else telling the story or editing it into a 30-minute show. So it's about Lauren Agee, who was found at the bottom of a cliff after a weekend at Wakefest. And it's the mystery behind what happened to her.
Mm-hmm. I've got my ideas, but I'm waiting.
Now, John, you have 3 weeks and you're not even going to believe what happens.
I can't wait. I seriously can't wait. I am one of your podcast biggest fans. When that pops into my inbox on Monday morning, I turn off my my other podcast and I put you on and I listen. And I said it before, it's a great story and it's also very well told.
Thank you.
So anything else that you'd like to share with my listeners?
Get involved. I think if your listeners, well, your listeners are PIs, correct? Or are they crowdsourcing people also?
No, my listeners are people of all ilk. That's a nice word, ilk. It's not bad. They come from all different backgrounds, but where it's focused for is aspiring investigators, people that want to get into this business or are new in the business and want to learn from other investigators what good investigation is all about. This is what I try to tease out of all my guests. You know, that's why I spend time talking about technique. That's why I ask about mentors. I ask about how things get accomplished, how you overcome adversity. And these are the reasons I'm hoping that as part of my giving back to the investigative community, that I can offer aspiring investigators not only a good entertaining format, but can be inspiring and informative as well. So that's what we're about here at My Favorite Detective Stories. So with that, I want to thank you very much. I appreciate you for your time, and we'll talk again very soon.
Thank you for listening. I hope that I've earned your interest and your time. Please leave any comments on the website, www.johnhoda.com. That's JohnHoda.com. Our next guest is Rachel McCarthy James. She lives in Lawrence, Kansas with her husband, Jason. She studied creative writing at Hollins University, and her work has previously been featured in publications including Bitch, Broadly, and The New Inquirer. What makes Rachel a wonderful guest for this show is her research skills and persistence that led to the solving of a century-old serial killer mystery. Egger-nominated book, The Man from the Train, is her first book. She co-wrote it with her father, Bill James, whose name you might know from Michael Lewis's book and the movie of the same name, Moneyball, starring Brad Pitt and Jonah Hill. Rachel is my first amateur detective to come on the show, and hopefully she will not be my last. Our circle around the campfire continues to grow by leaps and bounds. I thank you for telling your friends and leaving reviews on your favorite podcast app. FYI, each episode takes around 5 hours to research, interview, edit, format, and produce, as well as share. Then there are the expenses to air the shows. I love these podcasts, and your ongoing support is appreciated. You can support the show for less than a couple coffees a month at patreon.com/myfavoritedetectivestories. Patreon is spelled patreon.com/myfavoritedetectivestories, all one word. And you will receive all the stories and just the stories from my guests. But wait, there is more. Each guest has given me a second story exclusively for Patreon subscribers. Help me bring to you my favorite detective story.